This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan with me, Tan Chung Han and Brian Finnes. The top business stories of the day. We begin with actually a bit of sad news. Over the weekend, some well-known people passed away. The comic strip artist who did the Beetle Bailey comic strip, if you remember that, he passed away in his 90s. And then we had the news of the founder of IKEA, Ingvar Kamprad, also passing away. He was 91.
Yeah, so his is a classic rags-to-riches story. His first foray into the world of business began when he was just 5, selling matches to his neighbors. He went out to sell things like everything from pencils to seeds from his bicycle, and then obviously came up with the IKEA brand, I think, at age 17. Now, IKEA released a statement over the weekend describing their founder as one of the greatest entrepreneurs of the 20th century. Cause of death? IKEA only said that it's from a short illness.
Yeah, which is also fascinating. If you look at some of the, you go to Wikipedia, you get a bit of his life story. Apparently, his father gave him some money. The first, monies that he used to invest came from him doing well in school. Apparently, he was dyslexic. His father didn't think he would do so well, but he did well. So, his father gave him money, and then he invested it.
Well, speaking about dyslexic, maybe that's why he kept to a rather simple name for IKEA. And fun fact,
and all those impossible names to pronounce for the products that they have.
Oh, yeah, but in terms of IKEA, in case you guys didn't know, it comes from his initials, right? IK, and also the initials of the farm and the village that he grew up in. So IKEA. Maybe I'm dyslexic. I don't know.
Okay. So anyway, the IKEA legacy includes a massive fortune. Kamprad is world's 8th richest person with an estimated net worth of some $59 billion, according to Bloomberg Billionaires Index.
Now, despite his billions, though, he was also very frugal. He drove an old Volvo, recycled tea bags. I don't know if that's a good thing, but anyways.
I think that's taking it to an extreme.
Hey, kudos to him, all right? So he even took back, packets of salt and pepper from restaurant visits, and I kind of do that as well. When you get those extra sauce packets of chili sauce and all that.
Yeah, maybe, but you're not a billionaire. So if you're a billionaire,
not
people
yet.
Will think it's
How scant. Dare you? Oh, ye of little faith. All right, so
you're working BFM.
Thanks. Wow, that's terrible. All right, so he avoided suits and ties, always travel coach. So that kind of habit, right, was passed down into the corporate culture at IKEA as well.
Yeah, he was known as Uncle Scrooge and the Miser. And if you read the Wikipedia entry on him, he's left his fortune to his 3 biological sons and his adopted daughter. He's given $300,000. Okay.
Moving on.
Yeah, okay. So the name IKEA, it was founded in 1943. It began with marketing pens, wallets, and nylon stockings. IKEA, which is what we know it for in terms of selling furniture, it only started in 1948. It opened its first store in 1958, and now it has 400 stores in about 50 countries or 49 countries, and the stores received 900 million visitors last year.
Okay, so what about the succession plan? Has he been helming, or did he step back in the latter part of his years? Who is it that is there to take over?
Yeah, so he's not had an operational role since 1988. He stepped down as CEO. Well, he continued as an advisor, but he relinquished his role as chairman back in 2013 as well. So as you alluded to earlier, Sharad, his 3 sons now have active roles at the company. I don't know what the role, the daughter's role is, so perhaps that had a part to play in terms of that lesser inheritance. I don't know, pure speculation here.
Okay. Now, apparently, Malaysia plays an important role for Ikano's regional presence. And last April, on The Breakfast Grill, we had Christian Roykier, Managing Director of IKEA in Southeast Asia. And we spoke to him about IKEA's growth prospects in the country.
Malaysia will be our largest IKEA country in Southeast Asia for the foreseeable future. Go to Damansara on a Sunday. It's IKEA has been so welcomed by Malaysia. It is a market where we're doing well and where we can see that the customers like us. So we are, I wouldn't say obliged to, but I think we are obliged actually to do a better customer experience that we have today. We are very close to move the warehouse that is presently in Shanghai to Malaysia. Why? Because Malaysia's volume is going up and going up. So I think that over the next 5-10 years, you will see much more, not only retail business here, but warehousing business and manufacturing business as we grow here. Because with the local volume, it makes sense to have local suppliers.
That was Christian Roykier, a managing director of IKEA Southeast Asia.
And also keep in mind that Southeast Asia has close ties to the Kamprad family as well versus other markets, because out of the 12 franchisees around the world, only Ikano Group, the one which owns the rights to IKEA across ASEAN, Ikano Group is the only franchise that's directly owned by the Kamprad family. So I guess we are one step closer to Ingvar compared to other markets. And yes, we're on the first basis.
Okay, so what's in store for IKEA?
Yeah, so as Christian alluded to earlier, you know, they have already announced an investment of over 900 million ringgit here in Malaysia. So they are planning to build that regional distribution and supply chain center, and that will be among the 10 largest regional distribution centers for IKEA Group around the world.
Do we have any kind of global initiatives as well?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, now IKEA is evolving with the times. So if you look at their original strategy, the original strategy is really about big format stores in out-of-town locations because of cost issues as well, and also in terms of sizing issues. But that's changing. They are changing simply because consumer patterns are changing. So they're going to launch, for example, a pilot program this year where they're going to sell their furniture via third-party sites. So that's going to be a big change. The second thing that's happening also is this. They're starting to experiment with smaller format stores. So that started in 2015. They're already doing that in 44 stores. They're also now trying out pop-up stores, so where they're basically going to showcase some of their kitchen initiatives, for example, in pop-up stores. And augmented reality, that's another area to enhance the overall shopping experience. So they're not standing still, they're still running forward.
Yeah, you know, I think almost everybody will have to admit to having something from IKEA in their house. I must say, I'm using local carpenters now for the local aesthetic and feel. So, yeah, I moved away from the big stores. I don't need a Scandinavian aesthetic. I want a Malaysian aesthetic in my home.
Because you got time and money, Shiraj.
Yeah, you got the money.
Money's about the same.
Very affordable.
No, actually, it's about the same. You know, okay. You wouldn't believe it. You'd think it'd be more expensive, but it isn't necessarily. Yep.
We'll take your word for it.
Okay, moving on. Prince Court Medical Center. It could be on the market. It could be on sale. Now, according to The Edge Weekly, IHH Healthcare is in talks with Petronas to buy Prince Court.
Yeah, so Petronas has declined to comment on it, but according to IHH, they said that they're always looking at various opportunities. They would not, however, comment on specific transactions unless they are material developments. So Prince Court Medical Centre, just to give everyone a perspective, is a 277-bed hospital that was originally set up in 2007 and was built at an initial cost of 544 million ringgit.
Yeah, do we know... have any understanding? I know they're not going to give us any information, but why Petronas would want to be selling Prince Court?
Well, essentially, it's not one of their core assets, right? So given that downturn in oil prices, you know, Petronas has gone about with a rationalization, you know, cost efficiencies. So this could be the latest chapter in that ongoing process. Now, on top of that, you know, another rationale for this deal could be, you know, whereby Prince Court, they just have a poor financial record. I think accumulated losses until about 2016, from when they began in 2007, totaled about 1.4 billion ringgit. So despite that VVIP suite of 2,888 ringgit per night, they're not making money.
Yeah, but to be fair, they've been trying to be more efficient with their finances. One of the initiatives they've actually done is to cut down the labor force from 1,100 to about 800 currently.
Okay. Now, on The Breakfast Grill, back in May last year, we had Chong Yi Man, CEO of Prince Court Medical Centre, and he outlined the strategy for managing the hospital's financial performance.
We try not to push up the cost as much as possible, you know, but when we see the margins being continuously eroded, you have to maintain that. As you noted, as I said, healthcare costs comes from many areas. As you said, the shortage of nurses, which is a salary push, you know, if you don't pay our nurses reasonable enough, either they go to your competitors or they start running to overseas, right? So you get caught, salary push factors. You get, as I said, the ringgit push factors, you know. It's an ongoing struggle within the industry. Being a single hospital, I do understand that we may not have what we call economies of scale in certain areas. But I think to me, which something I always emphasize is our efficiency in processes are something that we need to be guided on.
That was Chong Yi Man, CEO of Prince Court Medical Centre. Now, the question also, I think, with Prince Court is that it's been linked to several controversies. And these controversies, you know, from the early days, right?
Yeah, so essentially, Perimba Construction was appointed in 2002 as the initial contractor for the project for about $350 million. They never finished the project. They didn't get it done, even after extension. So they were replaced by Sunway Construction. And then they finished the project in 2006. Now, also in mid-2010, it was reported that three of their top three officials, including the CEO at the time, Stuart Rowley, were being investigated. He resigned shortly after that.
Han, you know, there's the other side of the story. There's Petronas on one side and the other side is IAH. How are they doing? I mean, can they afford this purchase?
Yeah, it looks like it. So keeping in mind, IAH is one of the world's largest healthcare groups, at least by market cap. So, you know, it's over 40% of IAH is owned by Khazanah. It's listed on Bursa. It's also listed down there in Singapore. So, you know, if you look at their financials over the last few years, they've posted net incomes of anywhere from, you know, 600-700 million ringgit per year up to about 933 million in 2015. 2016 is fine. That came off a little bit. On top of that, you've got this aggressive expansion strategy for IHH. They operate in Malaysia, Singapore, Turkey, India. They have a presence in China as well, Middle East, etc. Right? So could Prince Court be the latest addition to IHH's fold? Now, Brian, I think we have some numbers also on their cash holdings. So at least according to the Edge Weekly, IHH has enough cash in the bank to perhaps finance this deal.
Yeah, you're spot on, because at the end of September 2017, they had cash and cash equivalents of over 5.8 billion ringgit. Short-term borrowings were only about 6.6 billion ringgit, and the long-term debt commitments were about 580 million ringgit. So given its balance sheet, this will not be an acquisition that would tax it in any way.
So what about just kind of, you know, pulling back in the broader healthcare segment? What do we have in terms of it? Is the reason to be bullish about it?
Yeah, so Sharad, the medical tourism industry in Malaysia is booming. So according to Transparency Market Research, they forecast that Malaysia's medical tourism market will grow at a compounded rate of, get this, 30% over the next 8 years. The market could grow from something up to 13.6 billion before the end of 2024.
Yeah, and going back to that grill that we had with the CEO of Prince Court, he said that the ratio of, you know, medical tourists versus, you know, the local patients is about 20-80. So only about 20% of their patients come from overseas. Now, they cite some big names like they were the hospital in waiting when President Obama was here, when King Salman was here, and also the Prince of Japan, right? So they've got the high names here. But whether or not there's enough people walking through their doors to make sure that they can turn things around, or will IHH have to come in if this deal goes through and really shake things up?
Okay, we're coming up to the next bulletin, and then we'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.